This is seminar, Agelessness. This is a continuation of lecture 17. The title is, I Begin Expressing My Agelessness by Thinking in the Now. The question was asked, what does it mean, now knows now? And so we will answer this before we begin the next lecture, which is lecture 18. So the question is, now knows now. How can now know now? Well, when you are living in the now, you know that you are living in the now, and you are now living in the now. And now is the only time that you know, because it's the now. And if you're going to seek to define now as a time or a place, of course, then you are going totally against the purpose of now, which means it's no time, no place, it's just now. So when we say that now knows now, what we mean by that is that when we are living in the now, we are only living in the now, and we only know the now that we are living in. And of course, the word ing is incorrect. When we live in the now, we live in the now. To be living in the now, it means it's an active verb, and you cannot live actively in the now. You can only be in the now. Now you say, okay, well, then the now must have a beginning and an end. It must have a time frame to it. It must have, now I am home. And being home, I am doing what? I am sitting in my chair. I'm reading my newspaper. I'm getting ready for dinner. I'm doing this or that. But you see, that's not the now we're talking about. We're talking about a now that transcends all human activity. It transcends all human understanding. How do you describe timelessness? How do you describe spacelessness? How do you describe agelessness? They are very difficult to describe because they are not human virtues. They are not human qualities. They are absolute qualities. And so when you say now knows now, agelessness knows agelessness. It only knows itself to be what it is. And I guess that would be a term for it. It only knows itself to be what it is. Timelessness only knows itself to be what it is. It's put in here because it belongs, but to describe it and define it is almost impossible, because it is description calls for active verbs, and this is, if you can say, an inactive verb. This is a static verb. It's a static word, a static phrase, but it knows now. It only knows itself. If I say, Lydia only knows Lydia, would I be true? Lydia is the only person in the universe. Lydia is number one. Lydia is the creator of all creation. Lydia is the essence of all. Lydia knows Lydia. Lydia doesn't know anybody else. She doesn't know any other being on the face of the earth, because everyone on the face of the earth is a reflection of herself. And so she only knows herself. So whenever Lydia looks in the mirror, she sees herself. Whenever Lydia looks at her creation, she sees herself. Lydia only sees herself in all that she is. So that is what it means, that now knows now. Lydia knows Lydia. Whatever we choose as the essence of all, it knows itself. Agelessness knows itself. And timelessness knows itself. Yes? You had a further question on that?
No. Thank you.
As you can see, it's a phrase that needs to be said, but it doesn't always have a good definition for it. Although that was not too out of a definition, considering the fact that Lydia is the allness of Lydia, and therefore whatever Lydia is, she sees and creates around her. And so Lydia knows herself through her creation. She knows herself through herself and through all that she is. An interesting concept. Okay, now let's begin the seminar, Agelessness, lecture number 18. And the title is, As a Responsible Human Consciousness, When an Organ, Action, or Function of My Human Relative Body Malfunctions, I surround it with my pure white light of love and see it functioning in its ideal pattern of perfection. Now, this is certainly a very human thing and a very nice thing. We certainly appreciate that. We appreciate the fact that we can, with our pure white light of love, surround our creation. And that is the essence of that statement. We are divine, and we are the pure white light of love. And we surround, with our pure white light of love, our creation. And our creation thereby expresses our pure white light of love. Now, what is our pure white light of love? It is our divine essence. It is the totality of us. It is the fullness of us. It is who we really are. Our pure white light of love is, what would you say, it's our divine self. It's our ideal, return to our ideal purity and integrity. It's our ideal purity and integrity. The pure white light of love is our ideal purity and integrity. Because what is it that we are seeking for our body? Our ideal purity and integrity. Why do we create our body with a malfunction? Why do we create any limitation? And we create it. We have to create it because we're the only creators of our world. Why do we create a malfunction in our human body? We create a malfunction in our human body because we have a false idea about something. Now, say for instance you have cancer. Now, what would cause cancer to come into your body? Well, people like to say it's confusion. People like to say it's bad thoughts. People like to say it's all sorts of things. Well, it's none of those things. Can anyone tell me what causes cancer to come into the body?
One cell is...
That's the action of the thought, but what is the thought?
Not being in harmony with everything that...
Well, see, this is what we have said, and this is what we believe, but what... Yes?
It's the thought, I have cancer.
That's it. It's just the simple thought, I have cancer. Yeah. Because you don't have cancer until you say, I have cancer. Because as the doctor says to you, you have cancer, and you say, I have cancer? You see, or you may have thought that you had cancer. Now, why would you want to think you have cancer? Why would any person in their, so to speak, right mind want to say, I have a cold, or I have a broken leg? Or I have problems, or I have bad relationships. These are all things that we consciously say about ourselves, and we consciously claim it. Now, a man and woman are married for 20, 30 years. They're getting along just fine. They hate each other. And each goes their own way and does their own thing, and they get along. They eat together, they sleep together, they live together. They don't know that they hate each other. They don't know that they'd like to change things around. But they just get along. Then someone comes along and says, how can you stand that wife? She is such a shrew. How can you stand that husband? He's such a careless idiot, you know. Well, then the seed is planted. And the feeling of not enjoying one another grows into the separation. Now, if someone had come along and said, you are such a glorious couple, you get along so well, you're so harmonious, I hadn't thought about it. We each do our own thing. That's it. You each do your own thing. And you get along so well. You enjoy each other's company. You enjoy being alone. You enjoy being together. You enjoy life in whatever way you have it. Now, that's what. Now that's another seed. Now, that seed is not a cancerous seed. That seed is a joyous seed. And that's the kind of seed that your pure white light of love wants to nourish and encourage. Now, the seed of cancer comes along and it says, I don't feel very well. I got problems. My life is bad. And you have the seed of cancer in you that says, I don't feel very well. I got problems. But where does it come from? It just comes from the saying, I have cancer. Now you say, Herb, that's not what you just said. Yes, it is. Now, how do you not have cancer?
By not giving it any thought.
By not giving the cancer any attention. And by giving attention to what? I'm whole and perfect. I'm whole and perfect. Every organ, action, function of my body is whole and perfect. Now, the cancer thought is pretty strong, and you have taken it and used it and lived it for quite a while, and you haven't paid much attention to it, and it's just sort of stuck away in there, and it's just sort of finding itself a nice home in your body, and it blooms every time you get upset with anything, but it's a cancer thought. And the moment you say, I am whole and perfect, you are taking away the nutrients of that cancer thought. You are taking away the attention that you've given to that cancer thought. So it no longer is there in you. Now, it is only the cancer thought that causes cancer. It is only I have a cold that causes a cold. Now, we have read books by Charles Fillmore and Ernest Holmes and many other fine writers who are in Unity and Religious Science and other organizations who do beautiful things, and in many of the Protestant churches and Catholic churches alike. And they all come up with some fantastic stories. Colds are caused by confusion, unhappiness. Cancer is caused by this. And I don't want to go and name all these things, but they go on and on and on, and they name all the diseases that are known to man, and they say the relative cause in the body that brought it about. They say the limiting attitude, the confusion, the unhappiness, and this is not true. This is not true. Because if it were true, every person who has that particular unhappiness in their affairs would have a cold. Any person who had that particular activity in their life would have cancer or whatever, and they don't. They don't. Cancer is consistent in certain areas, but not every area. Not every area. And it's only consistent because, now here we're having another fun thing. How many of you read your horoscope? And you read your horoscope, and it tells you what's going to happen this day for the Aries or the whatever you got. And so you say, yeah, but it happened, like it's close to that, you know, it's like nearby, you know. We endorse it. We give it power. And if you were to take any one of those things, take any one of the signs and take anything that it says for today, and you would find all 12 signs of the zodiac represented in that problem in a great number of people. You understand? Yeah. A great many people have. But the Aries say, yep, that's us, that's us, that's us, that's us. And the Sagittarius say, don't read it because it's not their day. It's not their week. It's not their month. Or it's not their time. They only read their own sign. You understand? And so, if you really look at this, I know a lot of people who hear this, me saying these things, are going to say, oh, are you against horoscopes and stuff? I'm not against anything. What I am is for being master of your thought. Being master of your own thought and not letting anybody or anything come along and say that it is master of your thoughts? Are you saying that the sun, the moon, the stars are set up to run your life? Well, that's the way horoscopes and astrology goes. And it's interesting. What the heck? I mean, it's a big business. It's a big business. My mother was into it. She did mine. And it said to me, one day I'm going to be a very great man. I will speak before large audiences or small audiences. And I thought to myself, how interesting. And you see, it covered the ballpark. Now, I'm sure that that's one of the least of the things that it said, but it was something that struck me and made me dubious from the very beginning. Okay? Mm-hmm. So, it's fun. It's fun to play these games. It's fun to do these things. To read your palm, my goodness, I used to read palms. It was just lots of fun. And I would tell people exactly what I knew was in their heart, and I could read their minds. I could be inside of their bodies, and then I could tell them what's on their palm, and they'd say, yes, 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 yes. Oh, is that all there? You know? And it sure is, you know. You know, there's a lot of people with a lifeline. You know what a lifeline is? With a lifeline that goes way, way on and on into the hundreds of years, who die young. Now, if it was foretelling what their life was and what their lifeline was, on left and right and all that good stuff, then it would be accurate. It would be a short lifeline. And sometimes there's a break in the lifeline when they have some difficult circumstances at that time of their life. Well, everyone has difficult circumstances from time to time. But if there's a break in the lifeline, that should mean you're dead, except that you go on. And you just have a ball. But you see, all of these things, you are putting yourself at the mercy of, so to speak, a contrived condition. Who is it who first set up what astrology meant? Who is it who first read the stars? Who first found all the 12 signs of the zodiac in the stars, you know? Who is it who did all these things? What amazing mind they have. But then, let's go a little further. Who is it who set up mathematics? Who is it who set up music? Now, you like a certain kind of music, and she likes Japanese music. And you say, oh my goodness, this Japanese music isn't my thing. It's a different set of vibrations. And the Polynesian music is another thing. And different islands have different... And the Africans with their drums, you know, that's their music. They go with whatever they have to create it. And you say, why? They have a whole symphonic orchestra of drums. And it doesn't mean a thing to a Western mind, perhaps. And you see, who is it who set up musicology? Who is it who determined what are notes that we like to hear that are salubrious to our hearing and seeing? Who is it who said that A means A and B means B, or one means one and two means two? You know, somebody set it up. Now, in the allness of all, it makes no difference. In the allness of all of these things are completely contrived, are completely manufactured, are completely put there as a way of accomplishing a given goal, you know? Now, why was the Pope so angry at, what was his name, Galileo? Why was he so angry at Galileo? Because they each had a different opinion about whether the sun went around the earth or the earth went around the sun. Which was the center? Well, now, the Pope said what? The earth. And Galileo said the sun. And you see, when you put, was Galileo found right? They're both right. The earth and the sun are both circling around. The sun is going through gyrations in the ultimate sky, and the earth is going through gyrations. The earth is traveling around the sun because it's one of the sun's what? Planets. And the mother sun, you might say, is the center, and the planets are going around. But the sun itself is going in its own activity in what organization? The Milky Way. The giant Milky Way. And there are many stars that are circling around our star in the ultimate cosmos, in the billions of years that it takes for them to make their circuit. And it's beautiful. And you take pictures of the night sky with a still camera, and you watch how the stars move around, and you watch how different things happen. It's glorious. But you see, we live in a contrived universe, in a contrived world, and we all know that we are its creator. We all know that when we close our eyes, everything turns off. And when we open our eyes, everything starts again. Now, some of us are more humble, and we say, oh, no, no, somebody's carrying on the ball while we're sleeping, and you know, other people are creating too, and there's other worlds, and there's other activities. You blew it. You blew it. You didn't stay with the realization that you are the one God. You are the one creative cause of the universe. You are it. And when you blow it like that, then all of the reality of your divinity, all the reality of your absolute qualities, you might say, are gone out the window because you have no longer taken charge of who you are and claimed who you are. Can you claim who you are?
Yes.
You should be able to. We say here, as a responsible human consciousness, when an organ, action, or function of my human relative body malfunctions, I surround it with my pure white light of love and see it functioning in its ideal pattern of perfection. Why don't we do that all the time? Why don't we do that all the time? Why don't we do that all? I surround myself with my pure white light of love. All my ways are peace and all my paths are pleasantness. I surround myself with my pure white light. And Ellen would say to me a while back, she says, why are you surrounding yourself with your pure white light of love? I am surrounding myself with the awareness of my pure white light of love. It's there. But I am making the awareness known to me and reminding me that I'm surrounding myself with my pure white light of love, and white light of love, and therefore I am living in the consciousness of that pure white light of love. You see? Now, I surround my car with my pure white light of love, and all its ways are peace, and all its paths are pleasantness, and the way is open before it. And lo and behold, it's true. And when I forget to take charge, you say, Herb, you mean you got to be on top of it all the time? Yes, you do. Yes, you do. You have to remember that you're God all the time. You can't go around feeling sorry for people and say, oh, I'm so sorry you got your illness. I'm so sorry you did this and that. You're not sorry. You know that they created that, and you created them creating that in your world, you know. And if you don't like what they created in your world, you just recreate it. You just say, hey, you're home perfect. Tuck, 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 tuck. You're home perfect. You're home perfect. You're home perfect. Get up and take your bed and walk, you know, walk, 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 walk. And a lot of people don't want to do that. I'm enjoying my sickness. First time I get flowers, I'm in a hospital. You know, people come to visit me. You know? This is what we do. I've been a bad person and I deserve to be sick. I deserve to be... You don't deserve anything except a good swift kick to wake you up. We are so silly. We say we know the truth. We say we live the truth. And then we use the information against ourselves. And it's such an unhappy thing to do. Now, we have the ability to speak our word at any time and claim it. Now, only a human has a body. Isn't that interesting? The divine doesn't have a body. The infinite creative cause of all which we are has no body. Why have we created a body for ourselves? We spoke about it last hour because it's an adventure we want to play, a game we want to play, to remember who we are. We make it as difficult as possible. It's so simple. But we make it look difficult, and then it is for us. Can matter be created or destroyed? Anybody? Can matter be created or destroyed?
No.
No. Science tells us this, and it is true. Matter can neither be created nor destroyed. So, can you hurt matter?
No.
Can you in any way mess up matter so that it is sick or evil or bad? No. So what game are we playing here? Mm-hmm. We're playing the game of our mind, in which we say that because we've had bad thoughts, we have a bad body. Well, because we have thoughts about our body being bad, if we want to say, being sick or being less than perfect, yes, then our body expresses that. But it's not because we're bad. And it's not because that we're thinking the wrong thoughts. We're thinking the right thoughts, all right. That's what's bringing our body in this incorrect or its condition that we say we don't want. Now, how do we have a body that expresses what we want?
By thinking the thoughts we want. By thinking those thoughts which we would like to experience.
By seeing it.
Hmm?
Perfect.
Hmm?
By seeing our body perfect.
We experience perfection by seeing our body perfect, by thinking the thoughts of perfection, by putting the cause in motion for what we want to have. And it's just that simple. We have said this for years. Science of Mind teaches this. Religious science teaches this. The Catholic Church teaches it. The Brahmins teach it. The Buddhists teach it. Everybody in the world teaches this. The Muslims teach it. Everybody teaches this. It says, there is a cause that comes before every effect. For every effect, there is a cause. There is no effect that exists without a cause. And we are the ones who make these causes to get the effects. Now, we could have the effect of being independently wealthy, Dorothea. Is that okay?
Okay by me.
Okay, by me. What sort of thought do we put into motion to have independent wealth, Dorothea?
Thoughts of wealth.
What?
Thoughts of wealth.
Thoughts of wealth.
Yeah.
That's right. We have thoughts of wealth which bring about wealth in us. Do we worry about bills? No. What do you mean? No. We don't worry about bills. Do we worry about anything?
No.
No. Do we know that all is in divine order?
Yes.
And when we know all is in divine order, then so it is. That is the big thing that we're working with. You see, only a human has a body. Only a human has a form. Only a human has a relationship. Only a human lives conditional. Now, is the divine conditional?
No.
It is. Not conditional. It is that which it is. It is its ideal self. And it cannot in any way be changed from its ideal self. It cannot in any way be made better or worse. Because it is its allness right now. Can the divine do anything about the human? No, it has no reason to do anything about the human. The divine is the divine. The divine doesn't even know the human. The divine only knows itself. Like the now only knows itself. It does not know the human. If it knows the human, then what happens?
It is
the human. You see, if your concentration is on your mistakes as you play the piano, you'll play your mistakes very well. And again and again and again. If your concentration is on the perfect notes that you wish to express, the melody that you want to play, then that's what you have. Mm-hmm. When we were working in Silent Unity and we had to type letters, and we had to type letters that had no mistakes on the envelopes. No, not even one little mistake. We wanted to be there. We wanted to study for the Ministry of Unity and be in silent unity while we were doing it. And to do that, we had, if we wanted to go through the Silent Unity program, then we had to type perfectly. Because if we had more than three envelopes in the wastebasket by the end of the week, after typing many, many, many envelopes, we didn't get to stay there. We had to have an empty wastebasket at the end of the week. And we just typed envelopes with addresses on. This is before the automatic typing machines. And then we were honored to type form letters. You know, to type people's names on the form letters and type these things. Dear Mrs. Robert Jones, I'm, you know, sorry to hear about your illness. I see you whole and perfect and I this and that, whatever our letters said at that time. I've changed so much since then that I'm sure that I say it differently. But we had to type those letters perfectly. But you know, we did it because we had the motivation for it. We had the motivation not to make mistakes, but to do it correctly. Not to stay in the ministry, but to go through the ministry through Silent Unity. Because we could have gone through it in the normal correspondence school, which we'd all done, but we wanted that. And so we did it, and we were good. And then, when I was at the University of Chicago, I had a job part-time in the library, and I was a typist. And so, what did I type? I typed French, German, Italian, Greek, Spanish, you name it. I typed it. And these are the cards that go in the file. And you have to type the language. Well, obviously, I didn't know all those languages. So what I typed was A, B, D, whatever, one letter at a time. And I got to be so good because I would not judge. I would just look at those letters and type them one at a time, and it was perfect. When I got done with my day's work, I had very few errors. And the errors were when I was distracted by somebody coming over and talking to me. In fact, I even had time on my job to write poetry. And I wrote poetry, and it was just lots of fun. But it wasn't all that good, but it was fun. Now, you see, here I was, if I said to you, will you type this letter in Greek? And you say, my God, you know, I don't know Greek. You don't have to. I typed the entire Art and Science of Wholeness in German without understanding the German. I typed it letter by letter. Anita Kuhn set it up and organized it and translated it, and then I typed it up in final form to go into a printed copy. She typed it up merely to type up the translation and get that ready, and then I typed it from that. And it was great. And, oh, I'm sure there were a few errors in there. A few people saw things that I didn't do right, or umlaut didn't get where it should have gotten, you know? But I knew right where my umlaut was on my typewriter. I knew right where those things, and I would just look at that, dup, 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 you know, just like a robot. And it's perfect. Now, it was perfect. Now, I wanted it perfect, and I did it perfect. How? By just giving it one point at a time. A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J. I did not think what those words meant. If I started thinking what those words meant, I might start translating it again. I might start wanting to change it again. But I did exactly what Anita had translated and typed it up. And you see, this is what we can do with our bodies, with our minds, with our attitudes and our souls. We can be completely free of it, completely free of anything, because all we have to do is just one note, one letter, one point at a time. Now, when you are learning to play the piano, you play it one key at a time. You play the one key, you learn the note, and you go to the next, and you go to the next. Gertrude came here after she had had some lessons in being an operatic singer. She was preparing herself to sing in Germany and join a choir there, which she didn't know about, but she wanted to. So her teacher taught her, here she is, a mature, retired school teacher. She's teaching her the scale. Do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do. Do, deer, a female deer. You see, she was learning those simple things. Well, she had been doing that for several weeks or maybe several months. And she came to visit us and we said, Gertrude, will you give us an example of what you've been learning? And with all the pride and enthusiasm and joy of her heart, she stood up and she sang, Do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do. Do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do. And she sang them beautifully.
Do you remember,
Gertrude?
I remember.
And it was glorious. We were touched. We were surprised, but we were touched because we had never seen anyone who really appreciated learning the scale as you did, and thereby you got all the things you wanted to do. And you see, but you could learn it, not because you didn't know it or because you had any other problem, but because you had the motivation. You wanted to do it, and then you just did it, note by note by note. And today, what do you sing to us, Gertrude? Do, a deer, a female deer. But you see, these are the wonderful things about living in this consciousness. As a responsible human consciousness, I surround it with my pure white light of love and see it functioning in its ideal pattern of perfection. Now, what is the ideal pattern of perfection of our human body? You have no idea, do you? You have no idea what the ideal pattern of perfection is of your human body. The ideal pattern of perfection of your human body is one word. It works. Perfectly. It works. Do you know how your lungs work, your heart works, your liver works? Do you know how your intestines work? Do you know how all the different stuff works? You don't have any idea. And you don't know. You don't know. But she is learning a little bit. She takes a little bit of lemon juice and puts it on her broccoli. Now, we have glands that put out a little bit of juice here and a little bit of juice there, a little insulin, a little bile, a little whatever, you know, all to make the body in perfect order. And our thyroid gland is the director of the orchestra. And it sends a little juice out here, a little juice out there to the different areas, and it gets us going in such fantastic ways, you know? It is part of our adrenaline system, and it gets us moving, where Sylvia got up here and she ran across the room like you'd think there was a racetrack, you know, and she wasn't tired. But she had her adrenaline pouring out, you see? Her adrenaline gland, isn't that it? Adrenaline gland and the adrenaline, how about the same thing, same word, yeah, yeah. You see, in perfect order. Every organ, action, function of our body is in perfect order. The harmony, the symphony that's playing in our bodies is absolutely magnificent. Now, do we want to keep ourselves as the director in order? We keep ourselves as the director in order of our human bodies by saying our human body is in divine order. Our human body functions perfectly. Every organ, action, function of my body, we don't say human body, of my body functions perfectly. Every organ, action, function of my human body, my body functions perfectly. Well, now, when we say that, what are we doing?
We're putting a cause in motion.
We're putting a cause in motion. And when we put a cause in motion, then what happens? Then the divine takes place. The divine fullness takes place. And that's what we are all about. The divine fullness takes place. Now, we also say, only a human has a form. Now, what form do you have?
Whatever I give it.
You see, you have a physical structure. And your physical structure is ABC. And so you think it'd be nice to be a little more in the B and a little less in the C. And you'd like to be a little taller, a little shorter. You'd like to be a little more energetic. You'd like to do different things with your physical form. Can you change that form?
Yeah.
What is your ideal form? Whatever you visualize it to be in your mind. Now, when you look in the mirror, do you look in the mirror and you say, that's who I am? Or do you look in the mirror and say, got a little polishing to do here. Put on a little weight here, take off a little weight there. Put on a smile here and take off a frown there. You know, what do you say to yourself? You're always polishing that beautiful form of yours. Now, why not say, as you look in the mirror, I now live in my ideal spirit, mind, and body. I now live in my ideal spirit, mind, and body. Ho, ho! Aren't I wonderful? Good morning, God. And look in that mirror and see yourself. Now, you all know about Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. And you know about her wicked mother, the queen. It wasn't the mother, stepmother. The queen, and the queen had a mirror, and she'd look in the mirror and she'd say, mirror, mirror on the wall, who is the most beautiful of all? And the mirror would say, not you, old hag, but Snow White. And so she wanted to get rid of Snow White so she would be the most beautiful in the world. Well, everything she did failed. But you see, she wanted to be the most beautiful. And she made herself into an old hag with a big old nose and a poison apple to give to Snow White. And Snow White ate the apple, and she couldn't come to unless her Prince Charming would kiss her in her sleep of death. And of course, her Prince Charming came and kissed her in her sleep of death. She woke up, and they got married and lived happily ever after. I don't know if they got the throne or not, but probably did. But that was immaterial. The point is, what did Snow White look like? She looked like the ideal woman from whatever the artist felt the ideal woman was. And what did the prince look like? My goodness, wasn't he handsome and tall? He was no Arnold Schwarzenegger, but he was a real fine-looking young man, you know? And that's what princes always are. You know, every prince that you read about, hear about or anything, unless it's the one that's in what's that movie we saw? A cartoon. The guy in the swamp.
Oh, Shrek.
Shrek. Schmorg. Shrek. Yeah, Shrek, the prince who was in Shrek, was not a very nice prince. He was kind of short. But it was cute. It was a symbol. It was a symbol that Shrek, who was this uncouth, unclean person, but with a heart of gold and values beyond imagination, and the prince was supposed to be a heart of gold and values, was a shrunken little runt that just wanted what he wanted, you know. So, you see, these are things that we do. Now, in movies and in other things, they paint these pictures to tell what they want. Now, what ideal do you have? We go on here. Only a human has relationships. Well, what is a relationship? If you're divine, you don't have relationships. You are. You may, all right, Sylvia, what do you do? What kind of relationship does a divine being have?
A relationship to be myself.
Unconditional love, excuse me. The only relationship that a divine being has is unconditional love. They love without condition. How do humans love? Humans love, unfortunately, with conditions. I love you, but I cannot have anything to do with you because you're married. I love you, but I cannot have anything to do with you because you're promised to somebody else. I love you, but I can't have anything to do with you because you're rich. You're filthy rich, and I'm poor, you know, and we cannot have anything to do with it. You see, there's always those conditions, stupid, stupid conditions. And that's why very, very rich people like to go around incognito pretending they're not rich to see if they can find people who like them just for themselves. And they don't find too many. Because having been very rich, they have different ethics, different values, different ways of looking at things. And it's not the way that a person who doesn't have money would look at things, you know. So, human relationships are developed as human relationships. And if we use unconditional love in our work with human relationships, they work out just great. Then we use that as our agelessness, because unconditional love and agelessness are the same. Unconditional love knows no other time than now, and agelessness knows no other time than now. It's kind of exciting. And then the other factor here, only a human lives in a condition. Now, do you live in a condition? What sort of an attitude do you live in? Do you live in the awareness of who and what you are? Do you live in the awareness of the ideal self that you are? See, this is a point that we sometimes forget. We don't live in the awareness of who and what we are because we are afraid of it. We are afraid of it because we have seen other people live in the awareness of being generous and being marvelous. We've seen other people as they're very giving. They go around and great philanthropy. They want to have it taken off their taxes. And what difference does it make if it takes off their taxes? They have so much money that they don't even know how to invest it or spend it. And they think they're saving it on their taxes. Well, don't worry about it. Spend it on your taxes. Then maybe the taxes for the rest of the population will be a little less. When you are a multi-billionaire, and instead of paying a couple million in taxes, you pay a billion in taxes. So that would mean perhaps that other people would pay a little less. You know, that's a good thought, huh? But who thinks of things like that? Me. But think about this. When you are an unconditionally loving person, you need nothing, want nothing, and you have everything. No matter what it is that you're involved in, you have it in fullness. No matter what it is you do, you have it in fullness. And you're just having a wonderful time. And it is the way it goes. You see, as a responsible human consciousness, when an organ, action, or function of my human relative body malfunctions, I surround it with my pure white light of love and see it functioning in its ideal pattern of perfection. This is who each one of us are. This is where we are and where we're going and what our values are. Are you ready? Are you ready to take responsibility there? Are you ready to live as unconditional love? Are you ready to live as a what?
Divine.
Yeah?
Divine being.
Yeah?
As an ageless being.
As an ageless being. Divine being is what we are, and we're not ready to live, but as an ageless being, what?
Well, I was thinking in relationship to the human.
Oh, in the condition. Yeah, that's true. But agelessness is in that condition too. That's agelessness and unconditional love are the divine qualities. And of course, the others are the human qualities, which we can just readily get along without. So let's think about that. And let's realize that that's a very wonderful and a very fine thing for us to do. And we can do it and we can enjoy it. So we'll take a pause now and we'll come back at a quarter after and we'll dig into it again. Okay?
Yes.
I love you. I love you.
I love you.
I love you.